Jesus. The yellow light!
I'm walking here!
Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rant Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming on the KTTH smartphone app. A King County city is pushing back. They're suing the county for not doing its job. And that is What's Trending, brought to you by Legacy Group Capital Northwest Fund.
What's Trending, a Jason Rant exclusive.
So there is an allegation coming from the city of Burien. We've been covering some of the drama in Burien. Drama because they passed an ordinance that banned public camping. This is a homeless encampment ban within 500 feet of locations with vulnerable populations. We're talking about schools, parks, senior centers. And the ordinance is only in effect when there's shelter space available. So they're following the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision several years ago that it's a violation of constitutional rights, Eighth Amendment specifically, if you force them to just leave and there's no place for them to go. Now, it's not always a great idea to lean into, well, you got to find shelter for some folks, because some people are never going to say yes to shelter. But they did what it is that they could. Now, we have Patty Cole Tindall, who is the King County Sheriff, secretly ordering her deputies not to enforce the ordinance. We, on this show, broke the news that, oh, actually, guess what? This is what she wrote in her email. And then all of a sudden, guess what happened? Exactly. All of a sudden, she's like, this is what we're doing. She actually went forward, came forward, actually admitted to city leaders what it is she did. Then, a few days later, she ends up suing in federal court, trying to decide whether or not, having a judge decide, whether or not this ordinance is unconstitutional. She believes it is unconstitutional. She's not a lawyer. She is a political appointee, politically appointed by King County Executive Dow Constantine. Dow Constantine does not support sweeps. Dow Constantine does not support the mayor of the city of Burien. So they go through federal court instead of, according to city leaders, instead of going through what the actual contract says they have to do when there are disputes like this. So that is what the lawsuit is about. It was presented yesterday afternoon. It got put into the system today in Snohomish County Superior Court, saying they, over at the King County Sheriff's Office, they breached our contract with them. We are a contracted city. It's called an interlocal agreement. This is a city that says with the King County office, Sheriff's Office, we'll pay you $16 million or so, and you will provide for us law enforcement services. That represents like 45% of the city's budget. So they're putting a lot of money into this, and they're not getting what it is they're supposed to get, which is, hey, we had a lawfully passed ordinance. It's on you to actually enforce it. And they chose not to. Rather than go through the process of going through like some committee within the department that is made up of a bunch of different city leaders where they're supposed to actually discuss some of the concerns that they have. They didn't do that. They went straight to the courts. So you've got this lawsuit. What are they asking for? Well, number one, of course, they're asking for something kind of simple, which is do your job. Actually do your job. Actually step up and enforce our ordinance. If you have any concerns, go through the right process. But there's another reason behind this particular lawsuit, I think, and we're going to talk with the mayor of Burien soon. I think part of this is about ensuring that they can get out of this contract if they so choose, if they want to go down the path of having their own police department. Now, of course, getting a Burien police department, just like having a police department in any city, it's expensive. And it's almost certainly going to be more than $16 million. And so what the plan is, or at least the likely plan, is to get in front of voters and say, okay, would you support an increase in taxes to make up for the difference between the $16 million that we're currently paying and whatever it would cost to have our own police department. Now, obviously, they don't know the cost yet. I imagine that behind the scenes, they're actually looking into what different scenarios might look like if they have, you know, X amount of police officers, if they have, you know, one police chief and that's kind of it because it's a smaller department, or they're looking through the staffing and they're trying to figure out, probably by talking to similar cities, what the cost actually could be. And again, I don't know what that number is, but it's going to be more than $60 million. So whatever that difference is, would residents be willing to pay for it to get away from having to rely on a politically motivated office? And with all due respect to Patty Cole Tindall, the sheriff, she is a political appointment. If she doesn't do what Dow Constantine wants, well, then she doesn't have a job. And that is true in cases of individual cities as well. The difference is when we're talking about police chiefs who end up getting hired by the mayor, they're more aligned with an individual city. They only have to be aligned with the city. They don't have to be aligned with the county. And as obviously this case points out, the county and the city, they're not on the same page with how to approach homelessness. And here it's actually harming the city of Burien. We've had three overdoses, including one fatal overdose, of homeless people in the city of Burien since the sheriff decided, I'm not going to enforce. I don't feel like it. Now, would they have died anyway? Maybe. Maybe. Sure. I don't know. Can you tell me for sure that they would have died? No, because otherwise they would have been in contact with law enforcement who say, hey, I'll put you in a shelter right now. I'll put you in a shelter right now if you want it. If you don't, you're going to have to move. Well, they never got that opportunity. They never got that chance. And so we'll never know for certain what would have happened had we had this ordinance actually be enforced. Now, I don't like the idea of the King County Sheriff going to a federal court, not directly to the city, at least first, to discuss some of their issues. They knew that the ordinance was being debated. That wasn't a secret. They didn't do that in secret. They did it in the open. There were plenty of stories. We talked about it on the show. They had all the opportunity in the world to raise this, and they chose not to. And then, of course, by trying to do this in secret, not enforce the ordinance, they're sending the message that they're not trustworthy. That's on them. That's not on individual deputies. That's not on anyone other than the decision makers. Patty Cole Tindall and King County Executive Dow Constantine. They're the ones responsible for this. And unfortunately, a whole lot of deputies end up getting caught in this. I don't know what the size is of the King County Sheriff's Office that's dedicated to Burien. I imagine probably 4, 5, 6, something like that. It's not on them. It's not on anybody else within that department. This was done by Patty Cole Tindall. She's the one that's responsible here. And ironically, the timing of this is just kind of odd to me. Because you know what's happening in just a few weeks? In fact, it's on April 22nd. So less than a month from now, there is a hearing, oral arguments in front of the Supreme Court. Not the state Supreme Court, but the U.S. Supreme Court. It's called Grants Pass Oregon v. Johnson. And in this case, they will be specifically deciding at the court level whether or not cities or any local jurisdictions have the right to set their own homelessness policy, or do they have to continue to abide by this Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling. And it came out of, again, Grants Pass, Oregon. They're saying, we have serious issues with homelessness here. We're seeing an increase in crime. We're seeing drug use that's out of control. This is a public safety and health safety nightmare. But we're not able to actually craft our own homelessness policy because of what the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled. So this is going to get in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. And we will have an answer from them within a few months, rendering potentially whatever it is this federal judge says completely moot. This was a premature challenge, made worse by the fact that they chose to keep this to themselves and kind of do it on the DL. So understand, we might be in a few months in a position, presumably courtesy of the conservatives on the court on the bench, that cities get to make up their own homelessness policies. And guess what? For cities like Seattle, probably not going to see a dramatic change. But cities like Burien, you get what it is that they put in place. And it should be up to the locals. It shouldn't be up to a county. It shouldn't be up to a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that has no idea what it's like to live in SeaTac or in Bothell or in Bellingham. They have no idea. What might be a reasonable position to take in Covington is going to be different than what would be deemed reasonable in Yelm. That's just how this works. And they should be, at the localist level, the ones responsible for crafting homelessness policies. Because right now, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal being in charge is basically like saying, well, Seattle should be in charge. I don't know many people want Seattle in charge of their own cities. I imagine that if you're living in Puyallup, you're saying, oh, God, we've already got the Seattle influence enough as it is. Please don't do this. Oh, kill me. So this all might be moot. We'll see where this ends up going. But I wish the city of Burien all the luck in the world, because they are on the right side of this. I think morally, they're on the right side of this. Ethically, they're on the right side of this. Constitutionally, I don't know. I don't know. I'm more annoyed with the process than anything. Now, I've got the story up right now at KTTH.com. I will tell you, I did just get, not long ago, a statement from the King County Sheriff's Office. It said, the constitutionality of Burien's anti-camping ordinance is squarely before the federal court. Burien's attempt to avoid a binding judgment by filing a lawsuit in Snohomish County is just a misguided distraction as we await decision from the federal court. Except, no, it's not. Because even in the case in which a federal judge says it's unconstitutional, and by the way, we're talking about a federal judge still in Seattle, probably going to find it unconstitutional. That doesn't change the fact that the way they did this was wrong. The way they did this does not appear to be following their own contract. They came up with a contract together. They both signed off on it. That's what you're supposed to be following. So the two, in a lot of ways, are irrelevant or unrelated. One would not happen if not for the move by the King County Sheriff here. So we'll be continuing to watch this. You can get the story at KTTH.com. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the road?
So there's a local reporter. I'm not going to say Deborah Horn's name, who has a story out. And it's about the accident in Renton that ended up killing four people, three children, a mother. Truly, truly disturbing and tragic. And she says that it's raising a question that apparently is on the minds of everyone. Should teens have speed limiters in their vehicles? That's the question. A speed limiter, as you can tell by its title, says we limit the speed a car can go. It's a device within the car's technology system that just stops you from driving more than, depending on how sophisticated the limiter is, it might even know what the courtesy of GPS tracking, might know what the actual speed limit is. And so it won't allow you to drive faster than that. Now, I find that to be problematic from a safety concern issue. We'll push that aside for a moment. But apparently, the question that's being asked is, should teens have speed limiters in their vehicles? So, number one, pretty much no one is asking that question. I have not heard that question be asked. I have not heard this topic be raised. With the exception of this one story, in which they don't even make the case that people are asking that question. And then number two, the second you look for just a moment into what a speed limiter is, or just think about the implications of something like this, spend 3 seconds thinking about it. It doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense. So let's just start off by reading the lead sentence of this story. Okay, again, the headline is Deadly Renton Accident Raises Questions. Should teens have speed limiters in their vehicles? This is the first sentence of the story. The March 19th deadly crash in Renton has some asking whether teen drivers who speed should face harsher penalties. Okay, so that's a different question, right? That is not at all related to the specifics of having a speed limiter. That has nothing to do with this story whatsoever, and yet somehow that is the lead. That is not calling for a speed limiter. And by the way, no, a teen should not have a harsher penalty. Why? Because a teen driving 117 miles per hour is just as dangerous as an adult driving 117 miles per hour. We're not going to change the way we punish equally unsafe behavior or equally illegal behavior based on someone's age. Because by that standard, well, let's punish then seniors at a higher rate, a harsher penalty, because they're in a car and they're driving too slow and they're causing issues on the road. Or statistically, they have poor hand-eye coordination, so that makes them a slightly more dangerous driver than anybody else. Let's go ahead and punish. No, of course, that doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense. Now, part of me hopes a Democrat brings this up. Because what's the one thing, that Democrats say about juveniles, teenagers? What do they say about them and their brains? Come on, Producer Jackson, you got it.
They can
say they're not fully developed until their mid-20s.
They're not fully developed until their mid-20s.
Exactly. That is a astute observation. That is what they say. Now, of course, that doesn't apply when some 13-year-old wants to get top surgery and become a boy. Then they're totally up for making these kinds of decisions. When it comes to committing a mass murder a day before they turn 18, well, guess what? They're still too young and they don't get life in prison because they just don't get it. So I want them to come out and say, well, no, maybe we should be punishing these teenagers for speeding and they should get harsher penalties. Well, why? Their brains aren't fully developed. You're going to have to pick a lane. Although, in fairness, in Washington State, they really don't have to pick a lane because they never get called out by media for this. So then she goes on in this story to quote one person. There's only one person who is quoted in this entire story. To make the point that, oh, all these people are starting to ask the question. Many are asking the question, should we have speed limiters for teens? The guy's name is James Egan. Now, I was going to read the quote that they included, one of the quotes, except I have no idea what it is that he was saying. They include a quote that must have an error in it. Like, it must be missing maybe seven words. Because the state, did we ever figure out what it is he was saying?
I put it into Google Translate, but nothing came
up. Nothing comes up. It really, it's barely, I mean, the words are in English, I will say that. But when you try to decipher what it is he's even trying to say, I'm just not certain. And I started to get angry. This was the first time that Jackson, our new producer, saw me get truly upset. I was throwing things around the office. I almost hit him with a pair of scissors. I was not trying to, obviously. This is the quote. Obviously, with a kid like that, doesn't have a problem with the rules. What does that mean?
I don't have
seriously.
The slightest
I don't even understand what they're trying to say in this. So, I'll read the other part of the quote that does at least make sense, and is again kind of ironic given the context of this entire story. He is his name again is James Egan. He's a lawyer. Licenses get suspended for all kinds of reasons. And right now, they include alcohol consumption or a series of too many tickets on the road. And maybe there could be other conditions added. Okay. That's all he said. Maybe there can be other conditions added. This is the last sentence of a story that's about many people who are asking the question whether or not teens should have speed limiters on their car. This is the last sentence. James Egan thinks Washington lawmakers should follow California's lead and introduce legislation forcing teenagers to install speed limiters to reduce speeding in a bid to save lives. That's it. That's the only time in which they talk about speed limiters. The last sentence and the headline. That's it. This is a contrived story. And this is why I get so annoyed with media outlets. And this is not, by the way, just a criticism of any individual or any individual outlet in Seattle. This is a local media problem. And in some cases, it's a national media problem. You've got a story that's a big deal. And we know it's a big deal. It is a sad story, a tragic story, a disturbing story. Period. End of story. Right? And they're looking at these stories and saying, okay, because there's such interest in it, because it's so dramatic, because it's so tragic, let's try to get a little bit more content out of it. So they want to stretch it over the course of several days. It's why even today you're seeing more and more stories about, well, we saw what happened in Baltimore with the bridge collapse. Could this happen here? And then they cut to this little tiny bridge that no one even goes over. In fact, it's a pedestrian bridge that one person walks over. And so could it happen here? That's how they try to localize. So it's the same version of that. They try to stretch it out over as many days as possible. And then you get something like this that doesn't even make sense. And I'd be very curious to find out how California plans to do something like this. I didn't see any external speed limiter devices. I haven't seen those. Maybe they exist. But you're going to tell me that we're just going to put this on all teenager cars? Do they all own their own cars? Because I didn't own my own car when I was a teen. I was driving my parents' car.
So was I.
Right? I mean, that's like probably what the majority of people do, unless they got a really old used car that, you know, is maybe a project to fix it up again and ride it. So I don't quite understand how you're going to do this. Number two, just from a safety perspective, what if there's a legitimate reason for you to speed? Like, what if there's a, for safety's purposes? I always hear these kinds of stories like, oh, we got to put the limit. Well, hold on. Are we really thinking this completely through? What if there's someone who's behind you out of control, clearly out of control? And we've seen stories like that, causing you to have to speed and then get out of the way. Like, these things happen. These things happen. But when you make these kinds of rules, we just basically pretend that there can be no unintended consequences. It's never thought through because, well, many people wonder why people don't really like local media all that much and have lost their trust. Yeah, many people do. 1-800-465-8770. Speaking of which, the media generally is all on board permanent supportive housing as a way to address homelessness. I've got a video up right now on my social media channels, brought to you by your local tax expert and advocate Greg Nunn and Nunn Better Tax Resolution. It takes you through why permanent supportive housing is a scam. It's what they're trying to push through in Redmond and soon your community. You're going to want to check it out. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRants, twitter.com/JasonRants. So I wasn't going to talk about that. I had the story scheduled yesterday and I decided not to do it because I was thinking to myself, okay, does anyone even know who Coleman Hughes is? I have never heard of Coleman Hughes before. Do you know who he is? Producer Jackson?
I think I've heard the name, but
I don't even think I've heard the name. I've never seen him before. I have no idea who he is. And yet somehow he got on The View to talk about a new book that he wrote, which really bothers me because I didn't get a chance to go on The View to pitch my book. So just FYI. But he was there and I said, I'm not going to do it. And then overnight into this morning, I cannot stop seeing clips from The View going around. Because he had an interaction with TV's dumbest lawyer, Sonny Hostin, who just makes, yet again, a total fool of herself. This time, however, somehow, she misunderstood a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. She misunderstands his position. And then accusing Coleman Hughes of being a conservative pawn when he's not even conservative. Because I have since looked into this guy. Because now I find myself really fascinated with his story. This is someone who is a CNN analyst, okay? He is not a conservative. But his book is called The End of Race Politics. And for some people, they might see this and say, oh, well, he's pushing back against identity politics. Surely he's a conservative. That's what conservatives do. But he's not. He's just like not a crazy person who thinks that people should be judged on the basis of some personal identity that they have, either born with or have decided to take on. And so the point of his book, the premise of that book, is that we should basically have, when it comes to politics, when it comes to culture, we should take a colorblind approach. Stop focusing so much on race, which is a reasonable position for him to take. Now, to Sonny Hostin, who loves identity politics, she goes up to him and says, look, the premise of your book, of your position, is fundamentally flawed, because she argues an MLK quote that was used in this book and is really the center. The quote is really comes to the center of anyone who pushes back against judging people on the basis of their skin color and not by the content of their character. She says, well, actually, MLK supported reparations, so I don't know what you're talking about. And to prove it, she reads a quote to him that she apparently didn't understand and didn't read the context of, because she only read the piece, or she read a little bit more than this, but the bulk of it was, this country never stops to realize that they owe a people kept in slavery for 244 years. They owe a people. Now, to her, that is proof that MLK supported reparations. Now, to smart people who understand what that quote meant and what the context was in which it was said, is that you owe fairness. You owe civil rights. It was never about financial reparations. That's not what he was supporting. That is not what she was supporting. And I guarantee you, because she was looking down at her note cards, this is what happened with Sonny Hostin. She decided to do her own research, and everyone around her was like, no, don't do that. Do not do, let us Google this for you. Let us look them over for it. Please don't do it yourself. No, please. And she did it herself anyway. And she was so proud of herself. Look at the work I just did. Look at what I just did. And then she decided to take it to The View when talking with this guy, and it did not go well for her.
Your argument for colorblindness, I think, is something that the right has co-opted. And so many in the black community, if I'm being honest with you, because I want to be, believe that you are being used as a pawn by the right and that you're a charlatan of sorts.
Okay, just real quickly. He's being used as a pawn by the right. I've never heard his name ever used by anyone, Republican or liberal. I am on Fox News almost every single day, okay? If he could be used as a pawn by the right, I would use him in a heartbeat. I have no clue who he is.
Me either.
No one knows who this guy is, okay? But he's being used as a pawn by the right. Even Alyssa Farah speaks up and is like,
not a Republican.
So how do you?
He's never voted for a Republican.
You've said that you're a conservative.
No.
No, you did. You actually said that in a podcast that you did 2 weeks ago.
I love it when people tell you what you said. I love that. That's my favorite part. No, you said you were going to be here at 4 o'clock. Why would I say that? I'm on the air at 4 o'clock. What are you talking about? So you mean to tell me I'm the one who's wrong about my own schedule and I just made a mistake? It wasn't you. You didn't just mishear. Okay, it was on me. Yeah, my bad.
I said I was a conservative.
He's not. Yes, you did. My question to you is, how do you respond to those critics?
Okay, let's answer.
First thing I think it's very important. The quote that you just pointed out about doing something special for the Negro, that's from the book Why We Can't Wait that I just mentioned.
Yes.
A couple paragraphs later, he lays out exactly what that something special was.
And by the way, you can tell at this point she's caught off guard, right? You can tell that she's caught off guard because she very clearly did not read past that. She didn't read the book, okay? She looked up MLK quotes on Google. Okay, she said, Google, MLK quotes reparations. She didn't read the actual book. So she's taking a quote out of context to fit her worldview.
Yes.
And it was the Bill of Rights for the Disadvantaged,
there you go.
A broad class-based policy.
But he also says you must include race.
No, he didn't. He says it's
he does.
Okay, well, everyone should go read the book, Why We Can't Wait.
Sonny Hostin is definitely the one that you should allow to correct anything you say, because she has proven time and time again on The View that she's the smart one. You know, you look at that whole group, they're all dummies, but she's the smart, well, no, she's not even the smart
one. Let's not get sidetracked by that.
Yeah.
I don't think I've been co-opted by anyone. I've only voted twice, both for Democrats. Mm-hmm. Although I'm an independent, I would vote for a Republican, mm-hmm. probably a non-Trump Republican if they were compelling. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any evidence I've been co-opted by anyone, and I think that that's an ad hominem tactic people use to not address really the important conversations mm-hmm. we're having here. And I think it's better, and it would be better for everyone if we stuck to the topics rather than make it about me.
But with I want to give you the opportunity to respond to the criticism.
There's no criticism. That is a made up story. That is completely made up. It's her criticism. That's it. She's the one who's criticizing him. Or did she do what everyone does, which is they look for something very specific on Twitter and you're guaranteed to find something, right? You're always going to find one person who's going to criticize someone for something ridiculous. And she decided that that's her view. Now let me go find something on Twitter that then verifies that I'm not the only one who holds this position. That's all that this is about. And by the way, kudos to Coleman Hughes, who kept cool the entire time. He did not raise his voice. It actually was a little bit boring. I think he could have been a little bit more, like, I would have a little bit of a personality. He doesn't. I should be invited on The View because I'll yell at her. I'll yell at Sunny. I'll call her TV's dumbest lawyer to her face. I'm not at first. I want to get some airtime before they cut me off and at least promote my book a few times. But then I would tell her.
Appreciate it. There's no evidence that I've been co-opted by anyone. I have an independent podcast. Mm-hmm. I work for CNN as an analyst. Mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. write for the Free Press. I'm independent in all of these endeavors, and no one is paying me to say what I'm saying. I'm saying it because I feel it.
Do you?
Okay, hold on. We got to go to break.
You know, no one there understands clock integrity. That maybe is a radio thing, but Whoopi does that a lot. Have you noticed that? That she'll say, oh, hold on, before you, hold on, we're going to take a break. Is she the only one who has access to a clock there?
I can't say I've really noticed it, though, because I don't really watch The View.
Oh, but you will, though. You will.
I guess I'm going to be forced to.
Oh, yes, you will be. That's what I do. And if I'm in a bad mood, like when I talk to someone who doesn't bring the microphone closer to their face, I will force them, that was not so subtle, was it, to watch The View.
Message received.
Oh, man, you're going to be watching so many clips tomorrow. I've already got some of the things in mind that I'm going to force you to look at. This happens all the time, and it kind of drives me nuts. Be that as it may, this is what you do when someone comes at you with a complete and utter contrivance, right? This is what you do. You just stick to the facts. Like, no, I didn't say that. Yeah, no, I didn't. And then people, I suppose, if they're curious enough, they'll go look up his podcast from 2 weeks ago and realize the quote was actually, I am not a conservative. I hate it when people say, I am a conservative. And then Sunny Hostin's like, see, you just said, I am a conservative. No, again, you're doing to this quote what you did to the MLK quote. You're just completely taking it out of context. These are folks who will say and do almost anything in service of their ideology. And their ideological belief is that we should, in fact, base how we treat people on the color of their skin. We've done a complete shift in how we think, or at least that's what they want you to think, that society is on her side, that societally we have decided to do the opposite of judging people not by the color of their skin, by the content of the character. That's now in reverse. In fact, we're supposed to assume someone's character based now on an identity. And sure, racial identity, gender identity, they are just what they say they are, right? It's a racial identity. But they're also political identities because they are used by folks in political ways to either get more power or take power away from you, to weaken an opponent, strengthen yourself and your own position, pander to certain groups so you get more support, so you get more power, so you get more leeway in decisions that you're making. That's all that this has become. And, you know, it's condescending. I don't understand when people allow others to do it to them or when they buy into it. It just, I don't understand it. I don't understand it. I don't know what it's like to be black, but I certainly know what it's like to be a Jew, to be gay. And you're going to tell me that I'm supposed to hold certain views and you're supposed to see me a certain way because the fact that I'm a Jew. Oh, no. Yeah, no, it doesn't work for me. And it doesn't work on me. And the worst thing anyone can do, regardless of the identity, is buy into this nonsense, because you're going to feel like you're owed something. You're going to have a perpetual chip on your shoulder, and it's not going to get you anything in life that will make you truly happy. And it certainly won't be a productive life that you lead. And that will always be the case. It will always be the case. It works for people like Sunny Hostin because she's found the sweet spot of pushing this garbage so that she can get wealthier, right? It works for her because she found a way to make money off of it. And, you know, kudos to you, I guess, if you found that path. Or you can join Robin DiAngelo and Ibram Kendi. Although no one's going to remember them. You think when Sunny Hostin is gone off of The View, do you think anyone's going to even remember her like a week later? Or anything she said or anything she did, anything she stood for, any cause that she tried to forward? No, of course not. No one's going to know who she is. And thank God, no one's going to remember who Ibram Kendi is. Robin DiAngelo, that name was said how many times in the last 3 years? Endless. When was the last time, other than maybe on this show to mock her, that you even heard that name again? Like, it'll pop up every once in a while. I'm sure she's going to put out another book that some people on MSNBC and in the New York Times or Washington Post will try to promote and say, oh, this is the next big thing. But no one's going to buy into it because we're kind of done with it. We've seen through this, despite the fact that there are people like Sunny Hostin who are clinging to it because it's been so successful for her career. It's maddening. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. There, I got it out of my system, okay? 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, we're going to dive into a Dani Wesneek column. I promise I'm not going to bore you like a Dani Wesneek column would normally do. But boy, did he say something that was so dumb. And it has to be called out. We're going to get to that and so much more. Don't forget, we've got our weekly video update brought to you by your local tax expert, Greg Nunn of Nunn Better Tax Resolution. It's on all of our social media channels. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rant Show. We are here on a Thursday afternoon that everyone today thought was Friday, at least judging by the parking lot being empty in the studio here. There was a Dani Wesneek column released this week that, I don't read Dani Wesneek. I don't read the Seattle Times unless I'm going there because I'm just, hating on myself. You know, low self-esteem. You go to places that are written by people with low self-esteem. And I saw this column, and it was about Bob Ferguson, and it sounded kind of familiar in premise because I thought at first he just stole one of my columns from the other day where I call out Bob Ferguson for suddenly claiming that he's all pro-cop. This is someone who actually cares about crime as the number one issue, which his campaign now says, despite the fact that he has never acted that way, right? He has never acted at least in the capacity of attorney general or just speaking up as someone who has a large microphone, never called out Democrats who made it so much easier for criminals to get away with crime. He never said anything. But now it's the number one issue. So the column goes through how this is kind of like something Bill Clinton did. Bill Clinton held certain positions. Then when he ran for president, he just switched it over and he got away with it. He got away with it. And anytime someone would then take a position he now holds, even though it was a flip-flop, people would say, oh, you're just copying Bill Clinton. So he's trying to put that exact dynamic between Bob Ferguson and Dave Reichert, former sheriff of King County, former congressman. He's the leading Republican voice, according to the polls. And we all know where the sheriff stands on this very issue, right? I mean, like, everyone knows. And even if you didn't know any specifics, if I told you or you read that he is a former sheriff, well, guess what? You would know precisely where it is he stood on crime issues. You're not going to assume that this is one of the sheriffs who supports criminals. So this is the line from the Wesneek column. And remember, this is about him suddenly changing his view and being all pro-cop. The leading GOP candidate for governor is a former King County Sheriff, Dave Reichert. We all know he's pro-cop, But now if he adopts his own party's plan for grants to hire more police, it'll seem like he's just echoing the left-wing Democrat. No, it won't, because people aren't as dumb as maybe Denny Westneat thinks. But if they were to fall for this, Bob Ferguson essentially just taking all of Dave Reichert's positions. If they fall for that, it's because of failures from people like Denny Westneat who don't immediately call it out. He knows that Bob Ferguson is being dishonest, right? He knows it. He's acknowledging it in this column. But now basically says, well, people aren't going to figure it out. Hey, dum-dum, if that is actually true, it's because you chose not to focus on this more than you did in this one column. Your newspaper chose not to point that out. King 5, I can't remember who the reporter was doing the puff piece. They chose not to highlight the fact that this is a new position for him. And yet, they don't seem to understand that by pointing this all out, they're calling their poor coverage out. But they don't ever want to change it, right? They're still choosing not to change directions, to at least be a little bit more honest about this race. Do you think that Dave Reichert is going to get some puff piece over at King 5 or any outlet? No, of course not. You think Bob Ferguson will? Yeah, absolutely. You've got local reporters who know what it's like doing a job or trying to do a job in a one-party state. You have one party in power, which means they know they can ice you out, not give you access, not give you interviews, certainly not give you any leaks, which makes your job much harder to do. And then you end up losing to the competition who was all too happy to suck up to Bob Ferguson or Jay Inslee or whomever is in power. They are, from a media perspective, incentivized not to push back too hard. Now, I'm not saying all reporters refuse to push back. I'm not saying all reporters are lazy partisans. Don't believe that at all. Jeremy Harris from Como TV is a great example of a reporter who's actually doing some hard work and pushing back. I don't know what his personal politics are. I have no clue. My assumption is everyone's on the left in media, outside of who's on KTTH radio. That's my general assumption. So I don't know. But I can't tell based on his reporting. I have no clue. I just know that he's calling people out. The same way we call people out on this show, and the same way some liberals will call people out. That's what you're supposed to do. And I guarantee you, though, if you got it in the right hands of a reporter, they would call out Bob Ferguson. But that's why they would never get the interviews. You think Bob Ferguson would ever come on the show? I would give him the questions in advance, and he wouldn't come on the show. Now, for him, it's like, oh, why would I do that? The Republicans aren't going to vote for me. Okay, I get that. That's fair. But there are other right-leaning shows or more moderate shows or reporters or print journalists out there that you could sit down with. You think he's going to do that? No, of course not. The same reason Governor Jay Inslee doesn't need to. Denny Westneat just proved that. Denny Westneat's revelation that Bob Ferguson is a fraud, not even really how the story is framed. It's like, oh, look, it's almost like he's impressed. Oh, look at Bob Ferguson. He's following the same footsteps of that pioneer and Bill Clinton. He's impressed by this. You shouldn't be. It should be totally embarrassing. And honestly, I just don't understand why people can't figure this out. Or maybe they do. Maybe it's on me. Maybe Denny Westneat knows precisely what it is he's doing. Judging by his previous columns, I find that hard to believe. But let's just live in that, you know, reality. Maybe this is all being done intentionally. And they just don't care. Because they assume that consumers don't care. And maybe that's also true. Maybe the readers, what's left of it with the Seattle Times and print media in general, maybe they don't care. Maybe they're all in on the joke and they think it's funny. And they know that, hey, it's Washington State. The chances of a Republican getting into the governor's mansion, very, very slim. Doesn't really make sense to even point any of this out. Yeah, okay, maybe. Meanwhile, there is a pro-Hamas protest outside of Fox News headquarters right now in New York. A bunch of people out there a day after a New York Times story gave a very clear and brutal report about sexual violence as experienced by one of the female hostages. a story that definitely won't get retweeted by anyone who's got a little Palestinian flag in their bio. So I'm going to assume that this is just one of those other days where they hope that everyone misses yesterday's story. They hope that everyone continues to miss the UN investigation. UN should be listened to all the time, with the exception of when they have a report about sexual violence being used in war against Israeli women. Then all of a sudden they say nothing. You see, they're focused on all those people who are starving to death in Gaza. They've been starving to death for a very, very long time. It's very odd how long one can starve to death. But yet here we are. Here we are. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. Don't forget, you can follow me not just on social media, but you can follow our podcast feed, guaranteeing you access to a show we do after the show. It's called The Leftovers. I keep talking at the end of the show. We put it into a podcast form. We put it up on our podcast feed. And if you are a subscriber, you get access to it. So go to ktth.com or wherever it is you get your podcasts.